Okay, everybody, welcome back once again to Tech Gumbo. I'm Haggai Davis II, along with Haggai Davis III, and we'd like to welcome you into our show where we talk about all things technology, but we do so in a relevant and interesting way. We don't want to use geek speak or a whole lot of acronyms. We just want to talk about tech in a way that's important and interesting to you. This is a conversational show about the past, present, and future of all things technology in a topical, interesting, and digestible way. So we do want to give a shout out to Cardinal Capital because, hey, if you're a business owner or a CEO, hopefully you have a good relationship with your bank. But if you're facing challenges and need to consolidate debt, you're in growth mode, want to buy new equipment, or level out your cash flow, whatever your need or challenges are, give Cardinal Capital a call. They have over 4,000 lenders where they can source capital, commercial capital for your business clients. Chris, Rob, and Gary at Cardinal Capital have a passion for business, and they want your business to succeed. When you meet with Cardinal Capital, they get to know you and your business so that they can present your needs to lending institutions that will best fit your unique situation. In short, they go after money for your business. They translate your business into what's important to banks, and they're good at it. Depending upon what the deal is, no matter how complicated or straightforward, they will help maximize your profitability while setting your business up for success. They find the best solutions for your situation, and here's the good part. They are easy and fun to deal with. For more detailed information, visit their website, cardinalcap.net, call 225-308-3700, or email info@cardinalcap.net. At Cardinal Capital, we connect businesses to capital. So, Mr. Davis, let's do some tech gumbo.
Absolutely.
Since it is the tax season, let's start talking about the cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, and your taxes.
Yeah, so you might be one of those large number of people who bought some Bitcoin somewhere in the past year, as it has gone way up and way down and way back up again, and the IRS wants to know about it. If you made money on Bitcoin, that's making money.
That's right. There's this thing called capital gains, I'm sure you're quite well aware of out there. And the IRS wants their fair share of your capital gains. So if you bought $1,000 worth of Bitcoin and it went up to roughly $10,000, $12,000, $13,000, $15,000, $20,000, whatever it's worth now, the number keeps kind of going up and up and up. Well, the IRS wants you to pay some taxes on that, but they have no way of tracking it.
Yeah, that's the problem, is because Bitcoin exists outside of a lot of the traditional infrastructure for measuring these sorts of things and tracking these sorts of things. There's no one going to send you a W-2 for your Bitcoin. So it's a whole lot more up to you to be a good citizen here.
Yeah, the idea that You're going to be on your best behavior, your do the right thing and claim every single penny's worth of Bitcoin that's out there and pay taxes on it is, you know, good luck to the IRS to find that.
Oh, I strongly believe they don't think they're going to get all of it. This is just, they're going to throw it out there and see who wants to. And if, because as you put it, the ability to actually enforce this is very, very difficult and probably not a good return on investment.
So the folks at QuickBooks and TurboTax have gone out there and said, hey, we can help you. So if you go buy the premier or self-employed version of TurboTax, it will allow you to track and report your Bitcoin gains on your tax returns if you so feel the need to do the right thing.
Yeah, maybe you are trying to show investment, maybe you're trying to show money gain or money, maybe you bought it high and you had to sell it low and you're trying to show a loss. There are tools, as you mentioned, TurboTax and a couple of the other ones will be able to help you fill out the paperwork to do all this.
Oh, I could imagine if you showed some losses, there's a lot of people lining up to report their losses on Bitcoin. But again, how are you going to prove it? That's the interesting question, because there's no tracking it.
Well, you can show transaction records. Like if I interface with a very common app is Coinbase. Coinbase can produce a transaction log of, you know, Haggai bought, you know, $500 worth of Bitcoin at the Bitcoin was valued at, you know, 20 grand. And so he bought X amount. And then, you know, a month later, Bitcoin was valued at 10 grand when he sold it. And so he lost half that amount of money.
Okay.
Coinbase can produce that transaction pretty easily.
Okay. I've never purchased any of the cryptocurrency, so I don't know, but we'll go with that. We'll take your word on it, because I know you have actually bought some before.
Yeah, back in the 2017, whenever Bitcoin was making its first big jump, I bought in and then sold out. But
probably a good thing. Better things to do with your money.
Well, if I would have left it in there, I'd have made a whole lot of money on it. So.
Well, this is true, but being the young student that you are, you kind of needed that money at the time, as I recall.
Indeed, I did.
Moving along, another Bitcoin-related story. A man is blaming Apple after an iPhone scam from an app steals $1 million in Bitcoins.
Right. This one, you know what? I feel, you know, normally whenever we cover these, we're really not super forgiving to the person who got scammed. This guy probably has one of the best cases of the stories that we've covered. His argument is that there is a legitimate Bitcoin app called Trezor, T-R-E-Z-O-R, that is only a web page. And there was an app called Trezor in the App Store. And the guy naturally thought that, oh, it's the same name, same logo. It's in the Apple App Store. It must be verified. And so he put in this information into that. It stole all of his Bitcoins. And then now he's saying, hey, Apple, how did you guys let something fake into your store? You're supposed to be the company who's all about the super clean, the super pristine App Store.
That's right. This isn't the Google Play Store, the Wild Wild West, where there are no rules. This is the Apple, you know, iTunes, iOS App Store that they fine tooth everything. You can't just put anything in there. And so, yeah, this guy says he had 17.1 bitcoins, which that's $1 million worth of bitcoins right now. And because he gave up all his username and password and everything, because he thought he was logging into a legitimate site, boom, it's gone. Now, again, going back and proving that he had that many coins, he had 17 full bitcoins, I'm guessing Trezor, the website can show that he had those. It's again, it's going to be difficult for him to work through. But, this is one of those where I kind of feel like, yeah, the guy's got a case.
And Apple has said that they aren't planning on working with him. Apple is not doing anything to help him out. And so the Apple's like, man, that sucks to suck, you know. And so that's just be cautious. Even on the App Store, there are still things that aren't as they appear. So,
yeah. And, you know, anybody with a, you know, a decent kind of application that creates apps can put logos on things and make it look legitimate. That's kind of frightening how easy that was for this Trezor app to take this guy down. Very disappointing.
And, you know, I think that also if you have a large amount of money that you're moving around, be very careful with it. You know, do everything you can to verify it in as many different places, because, you know, $1 million is $1 million. And so, you know, do all the sorts of good things that we talk about. You know, watch your passwords if you can, two-factor authentication, all those sorts of things, because that's, you know, there's always ways it can go wrong.
Absolutely. And because had this guy had two-factor authentication on his Trezor website, then they could not have gotten into his information.
Yep. They would have tried to log in, and he'd have got a notification on his phone. Hey, are you trying to log in right now? And he just said, nope. And that would have been the end of it.
Yeah. So there's another good example of why multi-factor authentication is a good thing. So we've talked about Apple. Now let's talk a little bit about Microsoft. The Microsoft Edge browser is really getting good. I mean, I use Edge, and I use Chrome, I use Edge, I use Firefox, but I use Chrome and Edge the most. And they now have a new deal where it's not going to allow these pop-up videos to just start running when you're using Edge.
I love that feature because it is so frustrating to me whenever I click on an article, click on a link, and the first thing that I see is some like video or some ad pop up. That is the worst design I can think of. And it is so like, it makes you want to immediately leave your web page. If your website starts throwing things at me that I do not want, I'm leaving. I don't care how good your content is. Like, don't do that.
Exactly. I hate those things. And so the fact that Microsoft Edge is coming out and they're doing this is going to be released in it's going to be part of the May release. It's not out yet. It's coming, though, and it's going to be really good. Hopefully Google follows suit and we'll put that in Chrome at some point. But Microsoft has definitely taken the lead on doing that. Now, doesn't mean that all that many people have switched, you know, back to Edge. There's still a Chrome still has the vast majority of everybody still using, you know, Chrome, but hey, we'll see.
And maybe Google doesn't want to because Google makes their money off ads. And so if ultimately, you know, you have to make that balance calculation of, would I rather show someone an ad that they want to see, or am I going to just show someone all the ads I can? And so Google has to make that balance. Do they only want their developers and their users to have good tools, or is it, hey, you know, you saw it, you might be more likely to buy whatever it is?
And, you know, there was another story about, while we're talking about Google and Google Chrome, about what an absolute memory hog Google Chrome is. But in the version, Chrome version 89 that came out in mid-March, it's supposed to have slimmed down the memory usage by 22%, which would be a pretty sizable savings.
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten to the point wherever the machines that I'm running on usually have a large amount of memory to throw around. And so Chrome sitting there at 1 gig, two gigs of memory doesn't really make a difference. But I noticed that Chrome is sitting at 1 gig to 2 gigs of memory for not that much happening. So if they got down to, you know, slimmer margins to compete better with Edge or compete better with Firefox, I'd like it. But I don't know that I'd notice it as much.
So moving along, a couple of stories about Facebook. The first one, Facebook is, they're trying to stop these deep fake ads. And they actually found a troll farm, as they're calling it, that had been pushing a whole lot of deep fakes out there, and they've shut that down, which is good on Facebook.
Yeah. You know, this is going to be very much part of that next generation of spam, is that it's going to be videos that are very convincing of someone saying something whenever that event never happened. And so the moderators having the tools to be able to catch this and remove this is really important.
You know, this gets back to that question of, is it right? Can I just create any video I want and put it out there no matter what it is? And, or does Facebook have the right to take down my content? And you know, Section 230 is here. It pops up again. Is it right for Facebook to do this? And, you know, right now it is.
And the interesting question is, okay, you know, a lot of these deep fakes are coming from Iran or Albania. And so what sort of regulatory power does Facebook have in Albania or Iran? What sort of power does Facebook have here in America? What sort of power does Facebook have to affect what I'm in America am seeing if it was generated in a different country, or I generated it here in America and it's seen in a different country, or like maybe it's generated in California and then it passes through Louisiana and then it goes to a different country? That's a whole web of things, and that's questions that I'm glad I don't have to come up with the answers to.
Oh, it's mind-boggling that when you start thinking about what all is involved in that, and just the legal wranglings that is still happening, still coming, the fact that you can have, if somebody creates a video with some elected official that comes out and says something absolutely ridiculous that nobody would ever believe, but there's a video of this politician saying something, that's the type of thing can incite riots and things.
Yeah. And that's why Facebook really needs to be aggressive in these sorts of things, because it doesn't even have to be on that large of a scale. It can be, you know, much smaller scales as the technology and the capabilities to generate deepfakes gets better. You think about, you know, what Photoshop was 20 years ago and who had access to it versus who has access to Photoshop today and what they can do with it. Oh, you know, in 10 years, you get some bored teenagers who are, you know, pretty technologically savvy. Can they just make videos of all the people who they don't like and just save them and release them later? And the potential for this to go wrong and to go viral is incredible. And Facebook has to monitor all of this. And they also can't be alone, because we shouldn't just hope that Facebook makes the right decision on all these sorts of things, because to this point in time, they've made the decision that's best for Facebook to make more money, not the decision that's best for speech and conversation and politics and American society. And so,
which segues perfectly into the next article about how 533 million users had their data hacked, and Facebook is saying, that's on you.
Right. So what happened here was that somewhere between 2017 and 2019, we're not exactly sure when, Facebook wasn't specifically hacked as they were scraped. Hackers went through and used the contact list feature to wherever you could feed in phone numbers and ask Facebook, hey, is this person that I know on Facebook? Well, hackers just sat there and made up every single phone number and just ran them through and said, hey, is this phone number? Is this phone number? Is this phone number? And started building a database and was able to say, oh, we now are able to start collecting information from Facebook about you, even though this is kind of how Facebook intended it, but not on this scale. The problem is that Facebook is not taking any sort of ownership about this. It just came out that this breach happened, and Facebook says, oh, this is one of those other ones that we already told you about when those other 500 million people had the other information leaked. But the problem is that this is a separate instance.
Yeah, and where Facebook is really getting into trouble with this right now specifically is in Europe, with Europe's GDPR and the Ireland Data Protection Commission and, you know, things like that, where they're saying you have to tell our users what's going on. And Facebook is saying, no, we don't. We don't have to say anything to anybody. And And this is really going to get into an ugly, ugly squabble. Facebook is going to lose.
Oh, yeah, because those countries, Ireland are, and the continent of Europe with the GDPR, they have laws in place. If you are Facebook and you don't disclose breaches, they are going to hit you with fines in the billions of dollars.
Or kick you out of their country.
Yeah. And that's what it's going to take to make Facebook sit up and take notice that, hey, you can't just keep sitting there and saying, oh, we're just going to brush another 500 million people having their information leaked. And one day we'll see a change.
We checked right before we came on with the segment. Facebook currently has 2.8 billion users. So they're saying, that's not even 25% of us. That's barely just 20% of our users. It's not that big of a deal.
But when you have 40% of the planet is an active Facebook user, there has never been anything where ever 40% of the planet was doing the same thing at the same time.
It's crazy. So
we will continue to talk about Facebook because they continue to be important. And we hope you're here to listen to it every Saturday at 4 p.m. on Talk 107.3 FM. And the show reruns Sundays also 4 p.m. If you missed any part of our conversation or you want to go back and hear previous ones, you can check out our podcast available on almost every podcast platform, including iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Google Music, and more.
And if you like our show, if you have any suggestions, we're on Twitter. We're at Tech Gumbo Show. Or you can text the show 225-255-0431. When you're on Twitter, give us a follow. When you're on Facebook, give us a like. And thank you for listening to Tech Gumbo.